noon here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. The time now is 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind.
Hi, everybody. This is Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Now, if you're a regular listener to this program, you may be a little surprised to hear that song run for so long. We've all come to know and love that song over the years. That has been the theme song to The Positive Mind, and we're all used to hearing the beginning of it, because frankly, we generally play the first 60 seconds of that song. And so you're used to the beginning, but today I thought I'd let you hear what the middle sounds like. And now you know what the middle sounds like, and if you'd like to hear what the end sounds like, I'll share the name and the artist of the song with you. We get a lot of requests and questions about that theme song. The artist is called Shadowfax. They're a group from the 1980s, and the name of the song is Another Country. And part of the reason why I decided to let it play a little bit longer today is that Another Country is really, it really fits with the theme of what we're going to be discussing today. As you know, we like to stay topical here on The Positive Mind. And one of the biggest stories of the last year or so, year plus even, has been the massive upheaval in populations and the massive refugee crisis that's going on around the world, specifically affecting Europe and the Middle East and Africa. And so I decided to today have a conversation with a man who has actually been a refugee and has lived that struggle of being a refugee. In the studio with me here, Dr. Christian Enescu. He's a neurologist here at the DeMel Center. Christian, thanks for joining us today.
Ben, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I'm glad you could make it. And we also have Kevin O'Donohue, who you all know and love. Kevin, also a longtime colleague and associate here at the DeMel Center. Kevin, thanks for being here again.
Thank you, Ben. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. So essentially, Dr. Enescu and I got to talking a few months back, and we were talking about current events and the news and what's going on. And Dr. Enescu shared with me a bit of his story of how he came to be in this country, in the United States. And I thought it was a fascinating and gripping story, and a story that needs to be told and that needs to be heard by people. And so we decided to use the platform of The Positive Mind to share Dr. Enescu's story. So, Doctor, tell me a little bit about your early life. Where'd you grow up? Where are you from originally?
All right. So I was born in Romania, in the town of Constanța, and I lived all my life till age 30 in Romania. So I was trained as a doctor in Bucharest, Romania.
That's the capital, right?
The capital of Romania, of course, yes.
Okay.
It was still obviously a communist country at the time. So it was very difficult to live like this, you know. It's very difficult to be free.
What was difficult about it?
Well, we couldn't express our thoughts or emotions openly. We were permanently watched. As you know, East European countries were under a very, very cruel regime. And being watched all the time, we had to control continuously what we discussed among ourselves, what we chose to like there. You know, we were very, very upset about not being able to travel, first of all. We are blocked behind Iron Curtain. And that's why it was difficult for us to live a very happy life.
And when was the moment when you realized that you had to leave your home country of Romania?
I was assigned eventually as a chief of a medical group in a place in Romania serving a nuclear power station, a plant. Okay, it was a construction site with 50,000 workers. And I had 8 doctors under me. And at that point in time, because there were also American, Italian, and Canadian consultants on the site, the Secret Service was after me to become an informant. And
the Romanian Secret
Romanian
Service.
Secret Service become an informant and a collaborator to find out if they discuss something which is important for the regime at the time.
Meaning your foreign colleagues.
Yes, exactly. So I was followed a whole year and tried. Discreetly try to avoid the contact with them. I said, well, I have to figure out exactly what I want. I have to think about it. I'm not prepared for this. You know, I'm a doctor. I want to help people. I'm not that kind of person who can become an informant or a member of the Secret Service.
So you were being physically followed?
Physically followed, interviewed, and also interrogated.
Did you feel in physical danger?
No. Physically, no. Not yet. But at the end of the regime in 1989, I felt the noose getting very close to my neck, you know. So I was followed every day almost, and they tried to get me to do something for them, to talk about engage in discussions with these foreign consultants, you know, with Canadian and Italian consultants
to essentially spy
them. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I didn't think it was appropriate for me, and I said I had to get out of here. It was my thought every day.
Well, what would happen if you had said no?
Well, you can't say no to those guys because obviously they'll be after you. Say, why are you against the party? Are you? I was not a member of the Communist Party at the time. I avoided it, of course. But to be openly, overtly against the communism regime was a very dangerous thing to do. Was a very unwise, they told me, to do. For this reason, I decided that the best way for me to avoid that situation is to leave the country illegally. Because obviously I was not going to be allowed to have a passport with a visa for a Western country.
So you decided that you had to take matters into your own hands, and that's the moment where you became a refugee.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So in my mind, I was already a refugee.
So you're one correct. Of the things that we have liked to do traditionally here on The Positive Mind is when we're talking about a topic, it may be, some things may seem very intuitive and obvious, but we like to get clear definitions. And one thing that Armand liked to do, Armand had a big red dictionary here in the studio, and we have it still. I have it right in front of me, actually. And one thing, and he was an old-fashioned guy who liked to look up a word in a physical dictionary, not look it up online, but really open up this big red dictionary. And I've looked up the word refugee because we like to define what we're talking about. And the dictionary here, which is the Webster's New World Large Print Dictionary, defines a refugee as a person who flees from his home or country to seek refuge elsewhere, as in a time of war or persecution. So what it sounds like, Dr. Nescu, is that you were fleeing, not necessarily in a time of war, but certainly in a time of persecution for you.
Obviously, correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And where did you go when you left Romania?
Okay, I got a passport eventually to go on a trip to Bulgaria, a neighboring country. And from there, I had some friends that promised me to take me to Greece.
So you were able to get from Bulgaria, or
from,
I'm sorry, from
Romania,
Romania to Bulgaria.
Legally, with a normal passport, a visa for Bulgaria.
Uh-huh.
And in Bulgaria, some Greek friends of mine arranged me to be able to be taken across the border, illegally, of course, into Greece.
From Bulgaria to Greece.
From Bulgaria to Greece, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then...
How did that happen?
Well, it was a complicated story. First of all, I prepared beforehand. I took some... I exchanged some dollars with my friends, the consultants, on the site. And then, of course, I did something else. I purchased a lot of... creams, facial creams, hand creams from Romania, with the purpose of selling them in Bulgaria to make more money, to be able to support myself during those days of waiting.
So you went from being a doctor in Bucharest to selling hand creams on the streets in Bulgaria.
You know, you have to do what you have to do in life. It's correct. You know, I wasn't ashamed of what I was doing. I think it was okay to do that. The purpose was clear. You know, there's a saying in America, keep the eyes on the prize. I wanted to get out. It didn't matter for me how I got out. I wanted to get out, and I did what I was supposed to be doing, you know, to get myself more money, to get the purpose accomplished.
So it was survival at all costs.
Survival, absolutely, yeah. Survival.
And you mentioned something just now that I found interesting, that something about waiting. And I understand for refugees around the world, a lot of the process is just waiting.
Waiting is very important. And waiting without having a clue of what's going to happen to you, if you're going to be successful or not in your attempt. So waiting and also having a lot of stress in the same time, which is very, very unusual. For me, I was trying to be calm, but I couldn't help myself worrying about my wife, who was pregnant, and that I'm in the seventh month with our daughter. So I told her I was going to leave the country. And she said, do what you can, but keep yourself alive, she told me. I want you alive. So I'll do the best I can, but I cannot stay here anymore. I'm out. And she understood it. She couldn't hold me. And, of course, I was worrying about her and my daughter.
Were there times at that point where you were waiting for so long? Did you ever get close to losing hope?
No. I don't know. Maybe it's... I had an inner peace at the time. You know, so I had the confidence that I was going to succeed eventually. Eventually, somebody was going to help me somehow. I didn't know exactly how exactly the events will unfold, but I was hoping to get some positive solution to this situation. And of course, in Bulgaria, I stayed for 5 weeks. And after selling all those hand creams and facial creams on the streets of Sofia, the capital of Bulgaria, I was able to support myself very well. Of course, I was in a house where I was waiting for a phone call from these Greek friends of mine, letting me know when they will come over from Germany with a bus to take me from Bulgaria to Greece. So every day I was by the phone, waiting, as you said, Ben, waiting and hoping. It was a very difficult time for me.
And how long did you have to wait for that phone call?
Well, 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
5 weeks, yes. In 5 weeks, they announced that they will be in Bulgaria at midnight outside a motel near Sofia, and to meet them there. And of course, they took a cab, and they got me there. And I met them. They were Greeks, and they're very good friends. Even after that, they became friends with me. And they helped me by placing me in a spot under the floor of the bus, which was very unusual. So the bus was empty, obviously. The bus went across the no man's land. And,
what do you mean by that?
By no man's land, there's a space between on the border. There's nothing there. Just a band of land where it's just a field. Just field. There's nothing there. No buildings. No animals. Nothing. The bus stopped there because it's between countries, and nobody has access to that land. Actually, none of the countries, the bordering countries, can have access to that land. And in this way,
so it does. It's not a part of any country. It's like a stateless land.
It's like a stateless land. Almost.
Where is that between?
It's between any country, Bulgaria and Greece. It was the Iron Curtain, uh-huh, which was Bulgaria, obviously, and Greece, which was a capitalist country.
So this was related to the Iron Curtain and the Cold
Absolutely,
War.
Absolutely, yes.
There was a no man's land.
No man's land, yes. And they stopped the bus in the no man's land. They hid me in that space under the floor. And then they told
me... Were you under the floor of the bus
or
under the actual chassis?
under the floor of the bus, actually. I told them, listen, I have to get out of Bulgaria. don't hesitate to go through the border. You know, no problems, they told me. And they went through the border. They stopped, of course, the border. And the Bulgarian soldiers came. There were no dogs, fortunately, no dogs. A dog would have smelled me immediately. I wouldn't have
any
chance.
And what were they looking for? Contraband? Or
exactly. Contraband, anything that's not supposed to be taken.
And you would have been suspicious because, why, Bulgaria was also an Eastern Bloc country and you were trying to leave?
Exactly, yeah. They wanted to, well, Greeks are always very smart people, you know. They do a lot of stuff. Bulgaria, obviously, was trying to find out if there are no people hidden there. The main purpose of the control was to stop people from leaving the country. Okay, they cared maybe less about anything like guns or TVs or anything that would have been taken by them from another Western country like Germany to be smuggled into Greece. But people had to stay inside the Iron Curtain.
And your friends were allowed to pass through because they were Greek.
Of course, absolutely.
So they were already outside of
outside,
that.
Of course,
right.
They had free passing. You know, they were Greeks. Yes, Greek passports. You know, so they took me out of Bulgaria and they stopped the bus. I said, "Christos is in Greek is a Christian is my name, and in Greek is Christos." You know, so Elada, so Greece. I didn't believe them, and eventually they came out and they opened the space and they took me out, and I saw a Shell gas station. It was clear from that point on that it was Greece, no more Bulgaria.
Why is that? There was no Shell?
No Shell gas stations in Bulgaria at the time. No Shell, nothing, just local.
Sure. So that was how you knew. And what was the feeling?
You have no idea. I screamed. I screamed in awe, in of joy that I'm out. And I was so happy you could not believe it, you know. And I was so excited that I couldn't sleep for the next 8 hours. I was so exhausted, you know.
Were you able to call your wife back home?
Yes, from Athens. We reached Athens eventually. And I was able to call my wife, who didn't know exactly what was happening to me. She thought I was dead because I didn't call her from Bulgaria. Bulgaria was a communist country. And having lost the visa, I mean, the time was supposed to be just for 2 weeks, a trip for me. But the visa expired, and I was illegally in Bulgaria, basically. So in this way, my wife didn't know a clue about me, didn't have a clue where I was, if I was still alive or not. She didn't know.
Incredible. Ben Starr here with you on The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York. I'm talking with Dr. Christian Enescu. He's a neurologist here at the DeMel Center, and we're talking about his experience as a refugee fleeing Romania and the Eastern Bloc countries before the fall of the Soviet Union and the end of communism in those countries. And as always, we like to stay topical. And of course, right now, the refugee situation is one of the biggest stories worldwide. And President Obama, I believe, will be discussing that tonight in his State of the Union address. And we wanted to bring you a very personal perspective and story about having lived and made it as a refugee. And so I thank you, Dr. Enescu, for being here. After you got to Greece, what did you do at that point? Because now you had finally escaped the Eastern Bloc, but that wasn't your last stop, was it?
Of course, of course. I registered with the International Catholic Migration Commission, ICMC, in Athens as a refugee.
And what is the ICMC?
The ICMC is an organization which helps refugees find a country eventually. I had no idea which one would have been my next country. I mean, I had no idea if I was able to reach a Western country or not, you know, because Greece wasn't accepting refugees at all. Norway and Sweden also I contacted, and they refused me because I was already in Greece. They said would be the second country for you. And in this way, you have to stay in Greece. The Greeks did not accept me because I wasn't of a Greek heritage. I had some Greek blood in myself. I have some Greek blood, but it's not provable with names and places, you know, in Greece that I was supposed to be related to.
So you were living in Athens at this point.
In Athens,
and
yes.
You were what? You were applying to different.
I applied to different. Yeah, with this organization helped me apply to different countries: Canada, Australia, America, of course, and other countries in Europe, West Europe, of course.
Did you have a preference where you wound up, or you just wanted to go
wanted
so you could
to
move on?
Get out to move on, honestly.
So it didn't really matter to you?
It didn't matter to me.
Just a safe place where you could eventually be reunited with your wife?
And to be legal.
Uh-huh.
I did not want at all to have an illegal status. For me, it was totally devastating if I weren't able to get to any country legally. Because I was planning to climb the ladder, obviously, in that country, to learn the language.
So you had training as a doctor in Romania.
That's correct. I was
so
a doctor already.
Your plan was what? To continue practicing medicine wherever you
exactly,
wound up?
Exactly. So I wanted to become a part of the country and to learn about the country and to become legally accepted. It was very important for me, the legality of the situation. I could not have been accepted otherwise, you know. So the only country that accepted me eventually, which was for me was excellent, was United States.
It was the only country?
The only country that accepted me, yes.
How many did you apply to?
Well, seven countries.
Seven?
Yes.
Can you tell me exactly which ones they were?
Okay.
You mentioned Sweden and Norway.
Yeah, Greece, Norway, Sweden, Australia, Canada, United States. And I think I applied to Switzerland also, but they
Switzerland.
Didn't. Switzerland, yes.
And of those seven, the United States was the only country that accepted your asylum request?
Yes. They interviewed me at the American Embassy.
In Greece?
In Greece, yeah, absolutely. And I was accepted as a refugee, and they told me you're going to leave in a month. So it was
so
after 1 year.
At that point, that was 1 year since you had left Bucharest.
Exactly, yeah.
1 year. How much time? You said 5 weeks in Bulgaria?
Bulgaria, 5 weeks. 11 months in Athens.
Uh-huh.
And almost 12 months in Athens. And in December, actually, in 1990, I took a plane to JFK, New York City.
From Athens?
From Athens, Greece, yes.
Okay.
And then from Athens, my final destination was actually Seattle. So
Seattle?
They assigned me Seattle because I was a doctor and they thought that Seattle is a good medical center there. It's a very civilized city, and I would have been able to make it very well in Seattle, most likely, had I stayed there.
How long did you spend in Seattle?
Well, a few weeks only. And it was interesting because Frank, who was at the refugee office in Seattle, asked me, what do I plan to do? I said, well, you know, I don't know what to do, so can you help me? So, well, we offered you asylum, and we can help you find a job if you want. Of course I want to work. So, but let me find out what can I do in Seattle first. 1 week, I just walked in Seattle from different places, to the Swedish hospital and medical center, which is a big center in Seattle, and to find a job. I couldn't because I wasn't licensed to work in any department yet.
Interesting. So your training from Romania did not translate, didn't carry over as a qualification?
No, and it was, I totally agree with that now, because I would not have been able to function had we not known the system at all. I wouldn't be able to take a decision how to talk to people, how to order testing, medications were different also. So I had to do some training as a doctor here to be able to function.
So you had to do another residency?
Another residency, exactly.
You didn't have to go back to med school?
No. Med school was accepted. It was a good medical school in Bucharest, Romania. Carol Davila is a very good medical school even now. So they accepted it, and I had to do another residency. But I have to pass certain examinations, the so-called USMLEs, United States Medical Licensing Examination, to be able to be accepted into a residency program.
And where did you wind up doing that residency?
Well, first year was in Brookdale Medical Center in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
And then, of course, in Brooklyn, I applied for a neurology residency at St. Vincent's Hospital in Manhattan, in New York City, and in downtown New York City. And eventually I got accepted, and I trained in neurology, and now I'm still a neurologist at this time.
And you've been here ever since?
Ever since, absolutely.
Incredible. How many years have you been in New York now?
Well, New York, 15 years.
Okay. So since...
Actually, 21 years with the residency. Okay, 20 years, yes.
So since 95, 96.
Yeah, exactly. That's the correct timing.
Amazing. Well, I thank you so much for joining us today. We want to talk a little bit about the refugee situation at large. You've been hearing the voice of Dr. Christian Enescu, a man who has shared with us his story of having been a refugee. His journey took him through 4 countries and 6 cities about 25 years ago. And it's really a pleasure to have you here with us and to hear your story.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, your feelings, because right now we're seeing just an absolute explosion in the population of refugees worldwide. And there's some real difficult human questions and emotional questions that come up, and real challenges that people face as refugees. What was the most challenging aspect of it for you through that year of uncertainty and transition? What was the hardest part of all of that?
Psychologically, we can call it a social death. From a certain status in your country of origin you're coming from to being nobody. So in Greece, I had to do things to work, I mean, to survive. I was a waiter for a couple of nights, but I didn't survive. They fired me. They say, va a casa, dottore. It was an Italian restaurant, and the work was way too much for me, you know. I couldn't survive there, and obviously. And then I did something interesting. I was in, I was offered to clean the house of a doctor in Greece for a couple of times. So a doctor in Greece, a retired doctor in Greece, in Athens, needed somebody who cleaned his house. And together with my friend, another engineer from Romania who was with me in Greece, you know, we decided to clean his house. So I was a doctor in Greece, I mean in Romania, and I was able to clean the house of another doctor. So it was obviously a situation which maybe some other people would not have accepted psychologically. But for me, I was grateful and thankful for having been offered a job that allowed me to make money to survive.
Do you think that he was inclined to help you because of the camaraderie of both being
physicians? Maybe yes. He was a very nice person, and they paid us well, better than other people, obviously. So because he knew I was a doctor, and he was kind of kind, very kind, and understanding what I was going through.
Let me ask you something. Have you been able to keep in touch with that man or with anyone that you crossed paths with during this enormous journey of yours?
Well, in Greece, yes, that doctor was still there a few years ago, 6 years ago, I think. Yes, was still retired, a nice doctor. And but other than that, the chief of the immigration organization retired from that position there. I did not. I don't know where she went.
What about your Greek friends who helped?
Greek friends, they were still there in business 10 years ago, but after that, they stopped the business.
And did you lose touch with them?
I go to Greece sometimes and to chat with them, but they don't work anymore.
I see. And what about Romania? Have you been back?
Yes, of course. After this, Romania became a NATO country, a very powerful United States ally in East Europe, obviously. And, of course, I was able to come back, to go back to Romania. And
what was that like the first time you went back?
First time I was after.
Was that emotional?
Less than I thought. Yes, because I was already used to living in America. And, you know, if you miss first 10 years, for instance, for, let's say, 6-7 years, come back in a country where you were born, you miss something. There's a transformation of the country that you don't really understand. So you go there and you see, what am I doing here? And I don't know anybody anymore. I don't know what they are fighting for, what their struggle is about, you know. I don't know the politics anymore. I don't know the people who are in power now. I don't know what they do. So you don't feel you belong to that country anymore. Even though you feel you're born there, you know the streets, the buildings, you know, but you don't belong there anymore somehow.
It's very interesting that you say that, because I think there's been a lot of anti-refugee and anti-migrant sentiment. And I think a lot of people have said something along the lines of, well, why don't they go back to their countries? But the truth is, as you're saying, that a lot of times when once you've been gone long enough, it's almost like it's no longer your country.
Exactly. Because psychologically, obviously, there's something triggering in you. That's the memories of the suffering and pain over the years in that country will make you kind of not reject the country, but stay away from it. Because all the stones, the buildings, the people will remind you of your suffering and pain. And we talk about the cellular memories, you know. So all the memories are in your cells, in your DNA, you know. So they are there. So by being in that same country where you left, you know, you left from, it will trigger the memories coming back to you.
Of course.
Kevin, I think you agree with
that. On a physical level, you can feel it.
Yes.
It's called harm avoidance. You want to avoid
exactly.
the original harm
exactly,
that
yeah.
you were exposed to routinely.
Exactly.
And I wonder if all these people are suffering under PTSD, but not post, real stress
exactly.
on a daily basis. Who wants to go back there and take that into your body again.
Exactly. And reactivate it, you know.
Reactivate exactly. it.
It's definitely something we want to explore when we come back. We're going to take a short musical break, and this will be the song you're about to hear will be the final request from last week. We had a lot of requests for music, and this one I think is going out to Hecky Jr. I believe that's your name. I didn't get a signature on the email, but thank you for your request. And this is Adriano Celentrano with I Wanna Know. Have a listen.
I want to know. I want to know. Vorrei sapere.
I want to know.
Vorrei sapere.
I want to know.
Come fa la gente a concepire di poter vivere nelle case d'oggi in scatolati come le acciughe nascono i bimbi che han già le rughe. I want to know,
I want to know,
I want to know, I want to know, perché la gente non dice niente ai Mr. Hyde, ai Dr. Jekyll, i costruttori di questi orrori che senza un volto fanno le case dove la carie germoglia già. I want to know, I want to know,
I want to know, I want to know.
That I fight for the ever.
You're listening to The Positive Mind on WBAI. And now your host, Ben Starr.
Ben Starr here with you with The Positive Mind. And we have in the studio with us today our guest, Dr. Christian Enescu, who's told us a story of having traveled and lived as a refugee throughout Eastern Europe, and Kevin O'Donohue of the DeMel Center. Actually, both of you gentlemen of the DeMel Center. Julian Gioiello is away, and as soon as he gets back, we'll get back to being the tag team that you've come to know and enjoy, I hope.
Yeah.
We had a lot of interesting topics broached, and I'd like to encourage anyone out there listening, if you want to weigh in on this, you know, have you been a refugee? Did you come from another country? Did you have a difficult and perilous and stressful voyage to make it to where you are? I know, you know, in the early 90s, we had an enormous amount of people who came to this country from former Eastern Bloc countries, whether, you know, former Soviet Union countries. I mean, there was a flood of them. I grew up with a lot of these kids in, you know, the early mid-90s whose parents, you know, had trouble with English, and the kids became like the translators, not just the linguistic translators, but almost the cultural translators. So if you've lived as a refugee, or, you know, you've had that experience, we'd love to hear your take. Give us a call. Our number here is 212-757-5217. 212-757-5555. Again, that's 212-757-5555. Dr. Enescu, when you see the situation unfolding today, what emotions does that provoke in you based on your lived experience?
I know exactly what they're going through. They are physically in danger. Of course, I talk about who are the real refugees who try to survive a situation which is a war situation. It's very difficult. So emotionally, these people are drained, completely drained, and the stress, the pressure on them is unbelievable at this time. Of course, I mentioned before, it's important for them to find a country that will accept them, where they can become citizens and they can be part of the country without having the risk of being returned to a regime which is probably oppressive for them. You know,
do you think that they are as hungry as you were to be legally established wherever they go? I mean, you mentioned that in the earlier segment, how important it was for you wherever you went to have legal status.
I don't know for sure, but some people are. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everybody is the same as I was, hungry to get a legal status, but be able to be accepted, to live in the country, for instance. I don't know if they want to go back to their countries, you know, because the situation is probably irreversibly changed in those countries, you know. So I don't know if they can find the same situation when they come, if they come back.
Yeah.
So
it would make sense to me. I mean, if you live for 2 months, 6 months, a year of anxiety, of being homeless, ungrounded, to finally reach a destination, you want to at least plant some roots, and legality is probably the first way to go.
Let's go ahead and take a call. We have Yvonne on the line. Thanks for calling today.
Hi, good afternoon.
Thank you. How's it going?
Okay. I have a comment to make. I've never been a refugee. I am from Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And as the minute that we're born, we're supposed to be citizens because we're colonized.
Right.
And when we first came to this country in 1969, we went through a horrible time, just as much or even more than a refugee would have.
And tell me about that. What was that like for you?
It was horrific. I quit school when I was 14 to go to work so I could help my mother who was sick. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment, seven people, infested with rats and roaches. And like I said, it was horrific. Couldn't get any help from anybody.
I understand. And so when you hear, you know, the stories that we've been hearing in the news and stories like Dr. Enescu's, do you connect with that on a deep level?
Of course I do, because we went through something very similar. But what's sad about our situation is that we're supposed to be citizens.
Right.
And we shouldn't have to go through things like that. And, you know, you come to America thinking that you're a citizen and you're a part, but you're not. You're not considered a part, at least by most people anyway.
Yeah, and we're still fighting this fight, even people coming from other countries today. You know, they could run into discrimination, racism, whatever. They're full citizens of the United States, but because they look different or whatever, come from a particular country, they could be treated really poorly. You know, you have to prove yourself doubly when you're in that situation here. So I feel for what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yvonne, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Did you ever think of the need to work? For instance, for me, it was imperative to find a job, to make money. I was not willing to stay on governmental subsidies, you know, to governmental, for instance, food stamps. Anything. I rejected, basically, after 2 weeks. I stayed in Seattle for 2 weeks only, then I moved to Los Angeles. Okay, and then Frank told me from the immigration office, you're going to lose the 6 months of help, the aid we give you, the housing and food and food stamps, you know, and also money to travel, you know. So I said, I don't need it. I need to work, to do something which is constructive, because a man who doesn't work feels awful, you know. It's totally destruction for the mind, you know. I couldn't have the idea of not working anything. I was telling you, even a waiter, anything. I was a doctor. It didn't mean anything for me, anything. So,
well, you know, that's also what happened to me. I mean, when I came here, I just graduated the eighth grade. I was going to ninth grade. In Puerto Rico, I was an honored student. I used to get all the medals on all the subjects.
Sure.
And when I came here, like I said, my mother got on welfare, and I went with her one time to the office, and she was treated so poorly and so humiliated, just such humiliation, until that's why I went to work at the age of 14. I lied about my age, and I worked since I was 14 years old, and I've been working for 43 years straight now. Mm-hmm. And my mother, eventually, after 6 months, she got off welfare because I told her, you don't need that. I'm working. And she was ill. You know, she had cancer when we first came here. And she didn't want me to quit school. She didn't want me to do any of that. But I just couldn't stand it at that point. You know, thank God in Puerto Rico, they teach you English and Spanish since you're in the first grade. So when I first, and it just so happened that I liked the language. So I was very interested in it. And like I said, I got all the medals in all the subjects, including English. So I came here, and it was quite easy for me to get a job.
It sounds,
know, even,
it
even
sounds a lot,
Yvonne,
like... Even
with the heavy accent that I had at the time, not as bad as I have it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've been working ever since.
It sounds like you. Part of what you experienced echoes what Dr. Inescu had mentioned about a social death, about having experienced a certain status or a certain position at home, and then almost having to hit a reset button when you get here.
Exactly.
I want to thank you very much, Yvonne, for calling in and sharing your story with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in.
You too.
Okay. You know, we live in the social death capital of the world here. You know, I was in a cab the other day and struck up a conversation. My cab driver was a mathematician in Bulgaria. A mathematician, and he's driving here up and down with that. You know, taxi drivers today, you know, they're always talking to somebody on the phone.
Yes, exactly.
They have this thing in their ear, and he's speaking a language. I'm like, where is that from? You know, and he started striking up a conversation.
We're going to try to take some more calls if you want to relate your experiences of having come to this country or having come to another country or having been a refugee. We'd love to hear your experience, hear how you connect to the situation that's happening right now in the Middle East, Africa, Europe, or if how you connected with Dr. Inescu's story. If you're out there, if you lived that experience of leaving the Eastern Bloc in the early 1990s, late 1980s, give us a call. Share that with us. Tell our listeners how that was for you. Our number is 212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555. And Kevin, you'd mentioned that you're actually also a descendant of refugees.
Indeed. My grandfather was smuggled out of Ireland in the hull of a ship. The whole, you know, the British were after him, looking for him, really wanted him. They actually hunted him here in the States. That's why he achieved such a great success in Ireland. When he came here, he started driving one of these horse-drawn carriages. He sort of went undercover, incognito. He didn't want to be discovered back in those days. A lot of Irish came here and worked in the restaurant business, in the bar business, open bars. Real, real tough manual labor stuff. And he was a hero in his country. I mean, talk about a social death. They wrote songs about him.
Wow.
So he became a sort of folk hero.
Well, let's try to get to another call. We have Abdullah on the line. Thanks for calling in, Abdullah.
Hi, thank you. Just a quick comment on what the gentleman said earlier about going back to your country, that everything looks familiar, but it's not a place where you really want to be. I'm from Haiti, and when I came to this country in the mid-90s, I didn't speak any English. You know, I had to learn everything, but it wasn't as hard for me because my parents were already here, and
okay,
they were established already, but I guess with me, my challenge was to assimilate to the American culture and getting bullied in school, or try to get bullied in school. You know, people try to bully you, and you're trying to make a stand for yourself. But I never went back to my country because...
Never.
I had a traumatic... Yes, I had a... Something happened right before I left. And tell you the truth, I think about it every day, bro. Till now, it's still on my mind.
About what happened in Haiti?
Home invasion.
You think
about... My grandmother got assaulted pretty bad. My brother, my sister got shot at. Our dogs got killed. And I just never got over it, so I never went back to Haiti.
I'm sorry to hear that,
Abdullah.
That sounds like it would be traumatic, and I understand why you think about that frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm afraid if I go back, I'm going to have to run into some trouble, so it just plays away my mind. I just never let it go. And for that reason, I never went back.
Well, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So you found a refuge here in the U.S.?
Well, my parents were here in Connecticut. They were already established, so they brought all their kids here. Definitely I'm not going to say it was bad for me in terms of food and shelter. I just had to cope with I just had to learn the American way, you know. Mm-hmm. I had to find my way as a teenager.
And that, that cultural difference can be challenging as well, because they're
very different
practices and ideas.
And trying to learn the slang, wear the clothing, even though I didn't want to. I had to. My dad, my father, sent me to school with a suit.
You know, I got to tell you,
my first year of high school.
Abdullah, when I think about Haiti and the 90s and refugees, the first thing that comes to my mind is Wyclef and the Fugees. And all that incredible music that they made together. I want to thank you very much for calling in and opening up and sharing that experience with us. And I'm glad that you feel safe here and that you found a home.
I love it here, man. In spite of everything that's going on, you know, I'm also an activist in my community. I'm very involved with what's going on. In spite of everything that's going on in the American society today, I love it here.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad that you were able to, you know, feel comfortable and safe to call us and share that experience with us today. So thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Take care.
Take care. We'll see if we can get a couple more calls in before the hour. 212-757-5555 is the number to call. We're talking about refugees. We heard from Dr. Enescu here in the studio his story of being a refugee that took him through four countries and six cities. And I want to thank you, Dr. Enescu, for sharing that with our audience.
No problem.
Absolutely.
You know, Ben, I can't help but wonder what Armand would say about being a refugee and seeking refuge. And,
yeah, I think he would have a lot of great metaphors for that.
We're all refugees. You know, we all survived childhood. You know that nowhere man's land in childhood? Well, we all survived it. Are you seeking refuge somewhere else? Have you traveled somewhere, even if you're an American citizen? But you like marriage. I mean, sometimes I think marriage can be your refugee status, and then you marry somebody. You're in a whole nother place. Not another country, but marriage can be another country also. Yes. So I can't help but think, you know, Armand, how he would bring this all down to all of us.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Let's get another call in. We're going to try to get a couple more before the break. We have Judith on the line. Judith, thank you for calling in today.
You're welcome, Ben. And first of all, I want to thank you for continuing Armand's good work. I knew Armand well, not well, but pretty well for a long time through Gary Null.
Uh-huh.
And I have great admiration for his work and for him, the kind of person that he was.
Well, thank you. That's very,
very
kind of you.
And just continue this work.
Thank you.
What country are you from?
Well, I am from Hungary, from Budapest, and I want to say hello to Christian. Christian.
Hello, hello. Neighbors.
Do you remember me? I was Joanna's piano teacher.
Oh, really?
And what
Judith,
a small world it's serendipity, because I am just ready to go to an appointment, and I say, oh my goodness, this is Christian.
Hold on.
Please, speak the
Wait
language.
Wait a minute. You guys know each other?
Well, you know, Judith is my daughter's piano teacher.
When is the last time you spoke to each other?
Oh, 10 years ago?
Amazing.
Maybe more?
Yes, about 10 years ago. And I was just thinking of Joanna.
Incredible.
And Christian, I just want to say hello to you.
Hello, hello.
And send my love to Joanna and Michaela.
My wife.
I'm a refugee too.
Can you say that?
I would love to talk to you another time, because I was just thinking of Joanna again, and we'll have to. You're still in New Jersey where you used to live?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
She has to speak Yugoslavian.
Judith, just so I get this clear, you have a personal connection with Dr. Enescu. You're a Positive Mind listener.
Yes, a very
You didn't
very
know he
fond,
was going to be on
very,
the show today.
Very warm, fond connection, because not only that, I loved his daughter, but I love the whole family. They are wonderful people and very, very smart. And Christian was smart enough to know how neurology, how piano and music helps the brain to develop both hemispheres. So we have a long connection.
Wow.
And I just want to, you can ask me any questions, but I want to say that I totally understand Christian's travails and struggles, because I was a budding concert pianist, and I escaped at age 18 with my 10-year-old brother, and through the borders and through the Russian flares, and went through different countries to get here, it's another story, and I totally understand. And the first time I came here, I had no piano, and I worked in a button factory, and I almost lost one of my fingers. And my mother worked in a hotel, and she used to have, you know, housekeeper at home. So we did anything just so, you know, I can get back to my music.
And you eventually got a piano, didn't you, Judith?
Eventually, yes.
2 years, yes. I used to run to different piano stores to practice.
Beautiful.
At that time, you had many piano stores, and the owners were very happy because I played well and that attracted customers, but I
want to thank you so much for calling us today, Judith. This was a magical moment. Magical moment on the
podcast.
Do you want to say goodbye? Do you want to say goodbye in Yugoslavian?
In Hungarian.
In Hungarian.
The Hungarian.
Yeah, just say.
Viszontlátásra.
Okay, yes. You speak it, yes. Very good, very good.
Yes.
Okay, Judith. Thanks, nice talking to you, Judith. Thanks. Nice talking to you. Okay?
Nice talking to you, Christian.
We'll talk again.
All the best of luck.
The
there.
Best to you, too. And we'll talk again.
So
yes,
how,
I hope so. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye, Judith.
All of
you. How do you use this knowledge, your training, your background? What do you do with clients? What do you do?
Well, interesting question, because at this point, I'm a so-called integrative neurologist. You see, my evolution in America was for me was stunning. I had an exponential growth in my life understanding. Okay, so I was exposed here to a lot of information, a lot of knowledge from different and wise people, and very powerful people. I realized suddenly that America is by far the most spiritual country on the planet. By far, I said. Why? It's not because of anything else, but the people in the country are good. They have a good energy. And the energy of a country and the country's consciousness is dictated by a cumulative energy of each individual living in this country. And Americans are by nature good people, helping each other, paying taxes, going to work. You know, they are hard-working people. They never complain about working too hard. That's why the country is great and will never be destroyed by anybody, you know, because people are nice and very good, very positive people. So, of course, exceptions are everywhere, but that's why it's important. The spiritual evolution I had here in this country allowed me to change my profession gradually to a better understanding of people's needs. You know, I treat people from emotional, mental, physical, of course, and spiritual aspects of their life, you know. I address them in many ways which help them understand how to approach life from a different perspective, and in this way they get better, because people have to understand that physical body cannot produce any sickness whatsoever. Physical body is just a mirror, of a dynamic mirror of what your emotions and thoughts are doing to it, you know. So we allow ourselves to be diverted into an area of negativity. That's why Armand's work was great. Okay, and in this way physical body becomes sick. So we treat physical body initially as doctors, but we should not stop there. We should address the emotions, the thoughts, the spiritual aspect of their lives. You know, many people go to spiritual leaders, but everybody will eventually go to see a doctor. Everybody. So doctors have the power in their hands to heal the planet one-on-one, one person at a time.
Let's go ahead and take one last call today. We have Evelyn on the line. Evelyn, I thank you for calling in.
Hello, everyone.
Hi there.
Thank
Hello.
You. And I love your show. My name is Evelyn, and I'm a Black American. Some 400 and something years ago when my ancestors came to this country, we're still battling of having to assimilate and deal in this country. Although my ancestors were brought here some 400 years ago, we are still being treated like we don't exist.
I understand that, Evelyn. And the crazy thing about that is, and the irony about that is that, you know, Black American culture is such a powerful cultural force, not just in this country, but around the world. People know about Black American culture, and yet, like you say, you feel like you're still assimilating. So I can understand how frustrating that must be.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be angry with other people and other cultures, and I love the way you're doing the show, and I love the way the doctor is talking about that, because sometimes I think that we don't come out and say these things, but I may be the first to say, well, you know, you need to go back to your country. But and I want to really say what I'm saying to you is that, do you feel what I'm feeling? Do you feel that some 400 years ago, I'm still processing what happened 400 years ago? Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Evelyn.
In. Thanks, Evelyn. I feel it.
Thank you.
I can somehow feel it. So thanks for sharing it. We can forget that you know, even people have been here, their ancestors here, for 400 years. You can still feel like a refugee. I get it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Be well. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Evelyn.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
So how do we...
Great work going.
Thank you so much.
How do people get in touch with Dr. Enescu?
Thank you, Ben.
Because I love what he said about we're a spiritually evolved culture and country, and that our thoughts can actually make us sick or even make us better. So I'd be really, really curious what your process is with clients. Do you fix them physically, or do you go right at the emotions? Do you try to find what is causing them to be sick? I know we don't have much time, but...
Yeah, okay, a couple of minutes. You're right. Good question. You know, first of all, we have to understand that I don't agree with the New Age movement completely, because New Age movement is dangerous. You know, trying to take people away from medicine. Medicine is very important. People live much longer these days because of medicine. So, give an example. If you have a fracture of the bone, you don't go to a spiritual leader. You don't meditate on healing the fracture. You just go to the doctor, orthopedics, okay? And then eventually you get to understanding that first physical body has to be treated, obviously.
Okay.
Okay, then you address the cause, which is a person's emotions and how he or she thinks about life itself.
Mm.
How he or she allows the stress or not, you know?
Wow. So as a neurologist, Dr. Enescu, your work is primarily focused on mental and spiritual health. And how it connects to physical health.
That's correct.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today with us. We're running out of time. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it very much. Kevin, how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, they can call the center here, 212-757-4488.
Fantastic. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, WBAI. It'll be the largest lottery drawing in human history tomorrow, and we'll be talking about gambling and money and how that affects us psychologically.
I won't be here on Thursday, Ben.
Okay, you won't be here. You're going to hit the Powerball?
I will win. Win the ball.
Okay.
I'll win.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back tomorrow, 1 p.m., right here on 99.5 FM. WBAI in New York City. Have a good afternoon. Thing gonna change. Your time now, baby. After a while, gonna do mine, gonna be mine. Day, a moment and droning, baby. Try. Won't be long. Thing gonna change. Sometime in the middle of the night, I get so lonely, so long. Time now, baby. But after a while.
changing, 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 changing.